This is Art Moves. Art Moves is a series of curated conversations at the intersection of art, innovation, and social justice.
Each week, we'll be talking with the innovative thinkers and doers who are forging new ground in the creative arts or redefining what it means to be creative.
I'm Tony Williams.
And I'm Eli Koslansky.
And we're your host for Art Moves. Today, we'll be talking with Okwi Opokwasili, multidisciplinary artist, and guest host Nyjah Spice. So let's talk about you. Tell us a little bit about yourself. And by that, I mean, you know, your journey, your upbringing, your interest in dance, how that was inspired.
Yeah, I mean, I was born and raised in New York. I grew up in the Bronx. I'm one of five children. My parents immigrated here from Nigeria. And, you know, we had a rowdy, lively household. They did not go back to Nigeria because at the time when they were here, the Biafran War was happening, which was when the southeastern part of Nigeria, largely Igbo people, were trying to secede from Nigeria. That war devastated the southeastern region, and so my family ended up staying here because of that. And I think that my interest in making art, making work, dance, theater, all of these things sort of stems from the role I saw these practices occupy in my everyday life, you know, from the dances that happened at Nigerian weddings to the dancing in my parents' house to, you know, the dancing you would see in the street. I mean, I grew up in the Bronx in the 80s, so that was sort of, you know, the days of watching, you know, people bring cardboards to the parks and their boom boxes and start breakdancing and doing the electric boogaloo. And it was just, you know, somehow dance and art making, all of that was a part of the fabric of the community. And I think what I did notice from a young age, though, was the disparity between what I was seeing in my life, my real life on the streets of the Bronx, and what I saw reflected, you know, on the in the world of TV.
Can you speak to that?
Yeah, I mean, I just thought that, You know, I didn't have cable. Maybe it was more interesting, but, you know, it just, television was super, super white, Midwestern. It seemed to lay out a standard of normal life that seemed to exclude all of the complexities of the communities that I was living among. I mean, and I'm, again, like, this is the Bronx in the 80s. So we're talking, you know, Puerto Ricans, Dominicans, African Americans, the last stragglers that were, you know, Jewish and Irish before urban flight took full hold. We're talking like Cambodian refugees as a result of the atrocities of the Khmer Rouge, South Korean folks, Chinese folks. It was just an incredible sea of diversity, complexity, and it felt, and to not somehow see that reflected in television, I felt, you know, or movies, I felt acutely aware of a kind of marginalization, right? I felt if I didn't see us present in that space, I felt that there was some sense of being made invisible. I felt that as a child. And also, you know, when there's one black show on television and everybody gathers around it, like it's this,
what's,
you know,
happening?
Yeah, like it's this major event. And I remember as a kid watching, you know, a full week of Roots when that came on, Alex Haley's Roots, you know, and it was just, or, you know, the Cosby Show, and maybe we shouldn't even mention that. That's complex now. but, you know,
but before
but
that,
before, you know, but it's true. Sanford is every time there were, you know, black people on television, it's everyone screaming, come, watch.
It's so
as
true.
If to suggest, as if, I mean, that kind of confirms the idea that, oh, okay, we're here, we're present. And so I think that all of these things kind of fed into my desire to make work or think about the stories of the people that I grew up with, that I lived among, that, you know, make up my world, yeah.
So was there a tipping point where you said, oh, this is a possibility, I could really do this as a creative venture, as a career or something?
Yeah.
Is there a certain age, like, you know, 12, you said, oh, well, this is, I could do that.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know that I ever said I could do it. I just said I would.
Okay. You would.
Do you know what I mean? Like, right. I think that, you know, yeah, that's a good point. I started writing plays when I was 7, too.
Oh,
I was,
cool.
like, writing.
Right.
I wanted to get at something, though, that, you know, really stayed with me as I was researching you, Okwi, and it had to do with Black female bodies and how they're subjected to discipline.
Mm.
You talked about that, and I wanted to just explore that somewhat.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I think mm-hmm. that we all, when I say subjected to discipline, I feel also that there is a sense of being policed, monitored.
Traumatized?
Well, yeah, and deeply judged, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, I think that girlhood, right? I felt also that a lot of the Black girls I grew up with, we were expected to behave in a particular way, right? We were expected to, you know, there wasn't any room. If you acted out, you were treated as an adult. Right? You were disciplined as basically a very terrible person, or you were expected to sort of stay very strictly within the bounds of what is judged as good and right behavior because you were an example of all of your kind to everyone, right? So I think that, I mean, I think the world of dance is a whole nother space when it comes to thinking about women's bodies and Black women's bodies in particular and what they have to the framework they have to fit within, right? Like it can go anywhere from, you know, I know people who were disciplined because they couldn't make a tight ponytail of their hair. You know what I mean? If you have dreadlocks, and I think in ballet, there's a kind of uniformity that you're supposed to adhere to. And just, you know, sometimes being Black means being outside of that, the uniform. But I distinctly remember the sense of, at the same time that we were expected to behave, to not embarrass anyone.
We also have Naija Spice. She joined us because she's a dancer
and creative
slash multidisciplinary.
Thank you so much, Tony, for having me on the show, and such an honor to be on this podcast with you, Okwi. So I'm listening to you talk about how all of the information that you've encountered throughout your life has informed your work or how you feel about the work and the work that you make. I wonder how you use all of this information to embody the choreography, like both consciously and unconsciously. How do you unpack that once you get into the studio? Is it a matter of improv? Is it a matter of, I don't know, using recordings? Are you using music? Are you using, you know?
Right, right, yeah. No. I think, Naija, it's almost, I guess I could say all of the above in a way.
Mm-hmm.
I often begin with texts.
Nice.
So I start with writing and then I find gestures. I think of language in the text and I start to think of gestures from some of the language. Like I just choose language that kind of spills out, that really speaks to me. And then I will improvise. But I'll maybe improvise with an idea. There was a show that I did called Bronx Gothic, and I was thinking about the schoolyard and being an adolescent, and I started to think about like twerking, mm-hmm. right? And so the idea for the movement came from the context of what was happening in the piece. But then I thought, can I do this movement and long enough that it falls apart? So I started just practicing trying to sustain one thing
mm-hmm.
for like a long period of time. And then, yes, sometimes I record it and then I will look at it and say, okay, well, does that need to, that's an interesting space to go into, or maybe not that. And I also work really deeply with my husband, my partner, Peter Bourne. He's a director designer. And so sometimes he also scores music. So he will, I am often asking him for like 30 minutes, an hour, so that I can have something to work with as I try to maybe work on sustaining a gesture or just really, pushing a gesture. And then sometimes I make scores, right? Mm-hmm. I will just, say, here are five things that I want to work on, right? I want to think about shifting the tempo, low, high. I said shifting tempo, like speed, slow, low, high, spaces of stillness, head shift, one head shift. I'll just set up different frameworks for myself to work within. And then there'll be music playing for a long time, and I'll just work with this score, like as a basic vocabulary. So I do a bunch of things. I hope that you're all asking very good questions.
I know take you places, right?
Yeah. Thank you for everyone. Oh my goodness, I don't think I said thank you for having me on the show. I'm really excited to be here.
You're listening to Art Moves on WNYE 91.5 FM.
We are really pleased to have Okwi Opokwasili, multidisciplinary artist, and our guest host, Nyjah Spice. I want to talk about the spiritual and cultural dimensions of your work.
Yes, it's so
and
immersive.
The use of your voice. I listen to your sounds, and I just think they bring so much texture to your work. I love the sounds that you make in your work. So if you could talk to us about that.
Yeah, I mean, I like to, how to like make a whole world of a piece is sometimes really important, or is always important, right, to make a whole world. But I like to make sounds. I like to sing and moan and I feel like sometimes when speaking stops, maybe there's a cry that starts. And then when you've exhausted the cry, maybe there is a movement in the belly that starts. Do you know what I mean? Like how to kind of have all of these parts of yourself activated. And I work with other people, and I hope that it activates, that we ask enough questions for them to be activated, for them to moan or sigh when that's the only thing that can come,
I find your work brave. Because it's very, very vulnerable to me. Mm-hmm, that's what I feel. And you really don't know how the audience is interpreting what it is
sometimes
you're doing.
Not,
how does that make you feel as an artist, or do you care?
Well, I mean, I'm really interested in, somebody showed me this beautiful little essay today that Toni Morrison had written. And it talks about something about the thread. Like what I'm interested in is the thread that connects your humanity to mine. And, sometimes it is in a very literal transmission of a story, but sometimes it is in a sensation. Sometimes it is in a vibration, in a shared space. What can we evoke in each other? And sometimes I feel like what I do is I give the audience freedom. Do you know what I mean? I don't give anybody freedom. I cannot give anyone freedom. That's ridiculous.
You're welcome.
But I try to make a space where the audience is free to experience something that I may not have ever imagined.
That's interesting.
They might hate it. They might, but I am working very specifically, but I don't know when we all go into a room together, like when people go to church or a meditation or they go to some practice, there's a part that sometimes the most important thing is to be in that space together. We may not all be experiencing the same thing. We may not all be taking the same lesson, right? But there is some kind of charge and some value to that to being in a shared space, making room for each other. And so sometimes I feel like my pieces, I hope to do that too. I hope to sort of acknowledge and express my gratitude that you've come to share this space with me. But I also want to leave room for you to, you know, have your experience free from what I might demand.
It's almost
That's
like
beautiful.
It's almost,
mm-hmm.
Yeah, it is beautiful. It's almost like, yeah, it's amazing, right? But it's almost like
it's not that. I'm not the only person who thinks that. There are a lot of people.
No, I understand. But it's the way.
The
stuff I've read about what you talk about your work and also what you're saying now. It's almost like the pieces you do are less of a presentation than a transmission.
I hope
with the. Yeah, but it's
That's what
yeah,
you
it's probably more than you imagine.
Right, but you have to. But also, I understand some people. There may be no transmission. Do you know what I mean? Some people go and may not. Do you know what I mean? And so
there's
also
a lot of people are spiritually dead too. So
no, what can I say? Yeah, I'm not trying to judge.
No. I'm saying judge.
You're right. There are people impossible at the same time. I think that's impossible because everything is information, and so whether we're in the space together, I'm sure that we always leave different. Whether we have taken it in as much as we could or was in our own heads at the moment, we always leave different. And so it sits in our unconscious.
Totally,
it sits and it then shifts things for us all of the time.
But don't you think to a certain extent that the audience completes the piece, you know, because transmission implies it's a two-way communication.
That's right.
Right? Okay. So it's not just you performing for them per se, it's that they're also
they're
performing
something
for you.
To me. Right. Yes.
You talk
right?
about
yes,
being comfortable with doubt and confusion. That's what your audience has to be in that space.
That's where we are right now.
That's yours. You love that.
Well, you know what it is? It's they say that at the gates of inquiry stands two guardians, doubt and confusion.
What?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Say that.
I didn't know that. At the gates of inquiry
stands
two guardians,
doubts
and confusion.
Yeah, interesting. The other thing that's kind of curious about it, when you do this amalgams that are really kind of curious, for example, I know I'm not going to pronounce this right, these West African storytelling, how do you pronounce it?
Griot,
yeah. Mm-hmm.
And Victorian Gothic novels.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, that's a hell of a combination.
Yeah. No.
I say what? But how does it?
Was a solo piece that I did called Bronx Gothic. And I just thought of it's like also, you know, I was a lover of romance novels or romantic novels, I should say, not romance novels, you know, from the Bram Stoker's Dracula to, you know, I wonder if we could consider Jane Eyre kind of among the romantic novelists and novels that were written so that the stories were revealed through letters, right? So epistolary novels, what's the word for that? So that could be wrong, but novels where it's basically, you know, a person is writing a letter to another person's writing a letter. I loved that.
Well, Bram Stoker is a very strange, Dracula's a strange book because it's really told through documentation.
Yeah.
Letters and manifests.
Yes,
and so it's not really,
right.
It's a weird narrative in a way.
Right. And I forget the manifest part, but I was really, you know, I think, you know, obviously the moving of the coffin, right?
Yeah.
You know, I think there was some of Dracula's coffin. But so I was really, you know, I started to think about how I had a love for these novels, but they also, again, were a space where I didn't necessarily see, there were no Black people in it, there were no African people in it. And I was always very aware of the fact that I was inundated and loving all of these pieces of literature, these movies. But I wanted to keep, I always felt acutely the absence of the people that I knew. I thought of the letters that, or the notes that we would pass to each other in class. I thought of the ways that they might reveal secrets that, you know, that if an adult would pick up one of these letters as it was moving through the class, they would be stunned, right? But I just started to think about the, just that world shared through letter writing amongst us. And so I thought about these novels that I loved and I thought, ooh, what if I set the task to sort of see how much of a piece I could reveal through letters. And then I was also thinking about griots, you know, these people who are kind of custodians of culture. They, you know, they reveal epics. And in those epics are generally families. And I just thought about, what if a griot might reveal secrets? What are some of the things that might be said that people don't want to hear? And so, I just was thinking about a forum of revealing something about a family. And so Bronx Goth, it's a coming of age piece, but it's also maybe a girl who is fractured because of some abuse that she's experiencing in her family. And also that period, I think, was a period of colonial expansion.
Well,
and
century,
so,
yeah.
Yes, yeah. This constant hearkening to sort of the dark continent and darkness, the fear of infection, fear of others, when in fact they were the others, you know, that were infecting these countries.
There was something that you said, and this may take us off in a different direction, but you talked about the Igbo culture and the fact that it wasn't patriarchal and as a result, more difficult to colonialize.
The British famously considered the southern part of Nigeria, southeast, and where Igbo people were, they called it like feminine. They called it messy because there was no... Traditionally, there wasn't a king, right? Like in the north, among the Hausa people, there was a king through which people, the English, through their kind of method of indirect, oh my gosh, what's the word for this? Indirect governance. I don't know if that's the exact frame, but basically a colonial rule where they would find sort of the powerful figure and then sort of through that figure change and shape, you know, the culture and basically institute their colonial empire through finding sort of the powerful person in that community. And but in the Igbo region, southeast Nigerian region, they couldn't do that because the society is ruled by elders, you know, so it's not one person who determines sort of the course that a particular village will take in making decisions. Everyone gets a say. So they did. The British considered that area messy, and it was harder to colonize, and it was colonized later than the northern part.
It's almost like orthodoxy always has a problem with indecipherable powers.
Exactly, exactly.
Because they don't know what to do with it.
Right, it was illegible.
It's illegible,
to them,
yeah.
Right? I mean, because they're also coming from a space of, you know, monarchical structure.
They don't have a model for it.
That's right, that's right.
You're listening to Art Moves on WNYE 91.5 FM.
And we're talking to Okwi Opokwasili, multidisciplinary artist, and our guest host, Nigel Spice.
I have a question. So I'm reading this book called The Creative Habit by Dwyla Tharp.
Ooh.
And something that stood out to me in my reading is she says, if art is the bridge between what your mind sees and what the world sees, then skill is how you bridge that gap.
Mm.
And so then my question to you is, how do you practice the skill of being, I guess, creative? And I know that it's just innate and a part of your nature because of the way that you perform and how you create your work and how immersive your work is. But I also wonder, like, how do you show up in the world every day practicing the skill of being creative? How do you feed your creativity?
Oh, this is a beautiful question. I do have to say, I like the gap. You know, I mean, I like how Dwyla Tharp talks about the skill to bridge the gap, whereas I'm trying to cultivate a skill to sort of sustain and hold that gap.
Oh.
Because I find that gap really interesting. But yeah, I think it's about just practice and listening, and like you're doing your reading. Oh my gosh, I feel like it's been such a long time since I've read a proper book. I am working on some other pieces right now besides doing for Colored Girls. I have some commissions that are coming up.
Nice.
So I have a daily writing practice, note-taking practice, a noticing practice.
What does that include? A noticing practice? Because
yeah.
it reminds me of this other book that it's like an audiobook that I read, and it's called The Secret is Feeling. And so it talks to just about, like, you know, the secret of feeling and how if you want something to be true, you have to actually feel it to be true. And so that kind of just remind me of what you said.
I definitely agree with that. That's interesting. Like, what do you mean? Like, if you want something to be true, you have to feel it. Like, what kind of thing would that be? Like, for example,
sometimes I struggle with the idea of being a victim or not being a victim because I have a hard time with those things. And so, to not be a victim, you have to feel that you're not a victim. Mm. Or if you are feeling victimized, you then think, you know, you just like kind of like interrogate yourself a little bit and like think deeply into that. And then you say, yeah. And then you say, you know, actually, this person probably isn't interrogating me. I'm just meeting this person where they are.
Right.
And, oh, I'm not. Okay. Let me not feel as if I'm being a victim.
Right.
And so that way I cut off this victimhood.
Yeah. It's so interesting because I do think like, you know, how do we cultivate a space that we do try to not have another person's voice and eye inside of us, right?
Right.
There's something about practicing, making gesture, making performance, where part of it is also trying to cultivate not having somebody else's eye on me.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like having that space for yourself. But the whole idea about not being a victim, being a victim, I just feel that construction to me is so charged because I just feel like, you know, this whole idea of people claiming victimhood is something that comes about or is, I think, spoken of by people who are the ones stepping on your face. Do you know what I mean? Like, you know, all of the people crying about don't be a victim are really the ones who, you know, while they, you know, cut your face and slice your heart are like, you know, don't want you to scream about it.
Right.
You know,
you got to walk in your power, right? Yeah. You got to walk in your power. You got to own that.
Right. But you can walk in your power, but you can also walk in the fact that, yeah, there have been things that have hurt me.
Oh, absolutely.
And I acknowledge that because I think there are some people who they don't want you to speak about the harm they've caused you.
Right. Absolutely.
And so they use the language of don't be a victim. And it's just kind of like, I'm not a victim. You hurt me.
Right.
Right. Don't be an abuser. Don't be a violator. And then I think there are a lot of people in positions of power who hate to see people who are struggling and dealing with violence cry out for help. But believe you me, when they want something and need something, they will clearly say that they're victimized. So I just feel like even this, if you are a victim of violence, you should call it out and say it. But that is not the only part of you. You know, there's many things.
Just one last point that I wanted to talk about, because you spoke about it in some of your interviews, and it was like dance being the stepchild.
I think that dancers are so incredibly generous, so skilled. I mean, I've worked with so many, but what do they get? You know, their bodies, you know, they work their bodies to shreds. And in the end, what are the safety nets that
there's
they
no
have?
NFTs? There's no NFTs
Yeah, there's no
for
NFT
dance.
For dance. And
there's
I
no
think,
NFT. Not yet.
And also, but I also think because we live in a capitalist society that wants some kind of, you know, object or article to put on a market and sell. I mean, dancers are working in a space of disappearance in the ephemeral.
Right, ephemeral, right.
You know, and so, but the dedication that dancers have to their craft, to the people that they work with, and I think the intelligence, the interrogation that I found among dancers in my community and the people I've danced with are it's an example and a lesson to me. So I love them, but I see as a dancer's age, what are they left with?
I mean, I could just sit here and listen you talk, you know, but it's been such a pleasure to host you on this show. Thank you so much for joining. And Nyjah, thank you so much.
And
we want to have you back because there's so much more to talk about, because I think your voice is really resonant. And it's important, your point of view, your perspective, your work.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Art Moves is co-produced by Brick Arts Media and pre-recorded at Brick Studio in downtown Brooklyn.
This has been Art Moves with your hosts, Tony Williams and Eli Kozlansky. Find some art that moves you and share it with someone.